And Dan.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you, Mr. Speaker?
I'm doing well. I've gotten a little bit of rest, but it seems like we're going to get right back to it.
Well, I thought I read in a story the other day, you're saying this budget situation is coming down to a year-round ordeal. I guess it is, huh?
Yeah, I think I used the football analogy that there's no longer an off season, and I think that's just the way it's going to be, and it may be a good thing. We need to be more reactive, more tuned in throughout the year, not just in the spring as are typically outlined by the legislative process.
Well, what is your reaction to the mitigation plan that was submitted by the governor yesterday?
Like with anything else, I think there's things in there that we can have a good discussion. There's probably some things in there that are non-starters right off the bat, but it's a start. It's not easy being the governor of the state of Connecticut or any state for that matter. You have to go first. You have to put the plan out there. By his own admission, there's things in there that he does not like. But we find ourselves in another situation to where the budget is underperforming, which seems to be the new norm. And we as legislative leaders now have to act in a bipartisan way to address that.
What are non-starters?
Well, going back to the hospitals, the legislators throughout the state, both parties have made it pretty clear that they see the hospitals as economic partners and, you know, large employers within the cities. So that there's a little swipe of some of their money that I don't think will allow. There's taxes that just wouldn't go through the legislative process. I think there's some revenue that we're more comfortable with, but the cigarette tax was a very difficult issue. Surprising to me, but a difficult issue to get enough votes for. So those are just a couple I think right off the bat are difficult.
How about the sales tax?
Sales tax, I've said all along that I thought it was a proper alternative. In Rhode Island, you go to Rhode Island, and they're doing very well economically. There's 7% sales tax, and they have a 1% restaurant tax on top. I know a lot of the restaurants came out and said, oh, that's unfair, that'll affect our business. But I really can't see anybody being impacted on a 1% tax. That's a $100 bill, and I don't go out to $100 dinners. It's an extra dollar. But it would have a overall impact to not only the state, but our municipalities, because municipal cuts are going to be on the table again. We've already said they're objectionable. There's $91 million in the governor's, how he laid out the budget with both holdbacks and lapses, that we already find it objectionable. And if we don't make a change, it's going to be more municipal cuts halfway through the fiscal year.
Now, we had Senate Republican President Len Fasano on before, and he said from the Republicans' perspective, these tax hikes being proposed by the governor are all non-starters. What do you say to that?
I think it's easy to say. I refuse to take anything off the table, as difficult as it may seem, because the decisions we have to make are very difficult. We look to save somewhere around $100 million in Medicare savings. Quite honestly, it was an initiative that was included in many of the Republican budgets over the years. So we initiated it. We started to see the faces that are identified with the cut, the senior citizens that were going to have dire fiscal situations, and we all agreed we have to come back in and fix it. But those are the type of cuts that are left. There are no more easy cuts. There's not little pots of money that are sitting around in the state budget for some legislative initiative. We've taken all of those. We've scaled back the state employees from some 52,000 to 44,000. We've scaled back supervisors. We've done a lot of the things that we should have been doing all along, which I would refer to as easy cuts, and now they're difficult. So the balancing act will be the Medicare savings program that is $53 million this year, but then next year is $128 million versus a 1% sales tax on restaurants. I'd go with the 1% sales tax, but those are discussions we're going to have in a bipartisan way over the next few weeks.
Right. Now, the Republicans, and again, Senate Republican President Len Fasano says the way these persistent budget deficits are fixed is to reopen the CBAC agreement. And he says one of the provisions of that agreement, which guarantees no layoffs, is holding back the state from the perspective of the budget. How do you view it as Speaker of the House?
See, I don't see the no layoff provision having an overall effect. The amount of retirements that we're having over the next 2 years, we're going to eliminate numerous positions through attrition. You still can close departments, move departments around. Even in some cases, if you believe the private sector can do the work better, you can privatize some of that work. That doesn't have an effect. You can move employees around. We actually have shortages right now. You call the Department of Labor for unemployment, you're sitting on hold for hours, and hopefully you'll get a call back. You go to the DSS office on Christian Lane, the line is around the building, and if you're not in line before 10 o'clock in the morning, you're not getting service that day. So we have to find that balance. The no layoff clause, while it is contained, it doesn't inhibit our ability to make systemic changes to government. And I think Len's confusing that a little bit. I think that's the easy answer. That's not an answer that has the greatest effect.
Talking with Speaker of the House, Joe Arasimowitz. He's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. The Republicans want this special session. They're talking about December 19th. They want this special session, particularly to deal with the Medicare savings program, before January 1st. Is there a reluctance on your side of the aisle to have this session?
No, that's not true at all. We don't have the ability just to call ourselves in at any moment. We adjourned CNADA back in October. And the session is over. We only can add new things to what we're doing if we're already in session. So the way we do it is the petitioning process. We get half of our members from both of the chambers to sign off on a letter asking us to come in to address this issue, which the House, both House Republicans and House Democrats, have done. And then the process starts. It's laid out within the statute. What Len is asking is the governor to call us in. And the governor's saying, fine, I'll call you in, but you're going to deal with the entire issue, not just the Medicare savings program. So it's a little bit of political theater. I'd rather just call ourselves in, do what we're going to do, and obviously we're going to have to address the deficit, which is $207 million now. We'll get new revenue estimates on January 15th. And then also the changes the governor made to the budget that affected some of the municipalities with the holdbacks and lapses. We can do it all, but let's do the MSP. The governor's made it pretty clear he's not going to call us in just to do that, so we have to do it our way. So for them to say that we're not willing to do it, I think the House, both Republican and Democrat, has the overwhelming majority of our members already signed the letters and have them before the Secretary of State to allow us to come in.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, have you submitted, meaning the House Democrats, has there been a letter submitted to the governor's office asking for a December 19th special session, asking for the governor to call this session in?
No, and that's what's ironic. They're asking the governor to call him in when we can call ourselves in. We've already started the process of calling ourselves in. I don't need the governor to call us in. We don't need the governor to call us in.
Okay.
The Secretary of State will call us in once we put the petitions in. If the governor wants to call us in, he's going to want us to address the deficit, $107 million. He's going to want us to address some of the implementation of the budget. And also, if we choose to make changes to the Medicare savings program, he wants it to be consistent with his overall views of where the money should come from. So it's a little political theater, but the easiest way to get us in is to have us sign the petitions. And House Democrats and House Republicans have already done that, and we're just waiting on the Senate.
Okay. So is there a chance, then, that the legislature could meet in special session before January 1st?
Theoretically, yes, but it would require the Senate, both Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats, to do the petitions and turn them into the Secretary of State. Once she receives them and certifies them, she will call us in no sooner than 10 days from receipt and no later than 15 days of receipt. So the clock is ticking right now.
Yeah. Representative, and we're talking with Speaker of the House, Joe Arasimowitz, how do we solve Connecticut's persistent budget deficits? Because it seems as if we are down this road now, month after month.
Yeah, and that is true. And we're not alone, but it doesn't make it any better. I mean, other states are struggling and dealing with it, too. We all followed what happened out in Illinois. But we need to deal with it. The way, in my opinion, is through economic development, to continue to work with not only our in-state companies, but talking to out-of-state companies, but doing more of a partnership with our institutes of higher learning. Everywhere else that's seen the economic boom, whether it's in the South, whether it's in the Midwest, whether it's out on the West Coast, has done so by partnering with their colleges, putting forward a plan to the business sector of what that looks like, and really sticking to it. And we just haven't done that enough. We've started it with the bioscience. Having UConn down now in downtown Hartford is being helpful, but we need to double down. One interesting point that has been brought up recently is we always called ourselves the insurance capital of the world, and we have a lot of insurance companies and jobs here, but manufacturing is actually now tied with them. And we don't talk about the growth that we've had in manufacturing enough. So we need to double down on that with our vo-tech schools, our colleges, and then also encouraging kids in our high schools to get involved in advanced manufacturing.
So you're looking.
If we do all that, we'll have a booming economy.
So you're looking at a partnership then with education and with teaching and technology, those areas.
Exactly. This year, I spearheaded a bill that actually took the department, the vo-tech schools, out from underneath the Department of Education to allow them to be more independent and work directly with the employers around the state to customize the type of programs they're offering. And that will start happening in the coming months. That's going to be a key to where if I'm a manufacturing company and I'm looking to hire, as some of them are, anywhere from 20, 50 to 100 employees over the next 5 to 10 years, I have to get those employees from somewhere. So sitting down with somebody at a state vo-tech school and talking about the type of employees I need, and then they take that curriculum and teach the students, that's a win-win for everybody.
I mean, I've had people from Isnantuk Community College, for example. They have an excellent program, as you know, for training those who want a career in manufacturing. Central Connecticut State University. But yet, you've got the head of the university system now calling for a consolidation of all of this. What do you say to that?
Consolidation, as long as it's done in a way to where we're still providing the necessary satellite campuses to ensure the kids are going, it's fine. What I've heard from Marco Jakian is a lot of it's going to be management consolidations. There won't be individual presidents from each and every community college. There'll be one. We're going to centralize the purchasing. I think that's long overdue, not only at the state level. One of the things we're going to include in our upcoming budget mitigation is centralized human resources. We don't need multiple human resources offices throughout the state of Connecticut for state employees. Those are the type of restructuring that Mark's looking at. We should do it at the state level. We should do it at the college level. And we should also do it at the municipal level. I know the municipalities are very frustrated with us and our cuts to the municipalities, but they need to look at what they do and start paring it down, start sharing resources, and really do the regionalization that we've been talking about for years.
You know, part of the problem is, and you know this, Representative, you start bringing up consolidation, legitimate consolidation, and everybody starts squawking. They want to protect their own turf. It's,
yep.
Don't cut my program, cut the other person's program. You know what I'm saying?
And that is the most frustrating aspect for me. And not only is it true at the municipal level, the state level, the college level, it's also true on, you know, some of the programs that we offer statewide. We hear all the time, you know, cut, live within your means, state of Connecticut. You're spending too much money. And then we make a cut, and the faces pop out of who we cut, and everybody's like, oh, wait a minute, we got to fix that. That we need to take some difficult medicine if we're going to get Connecticut back on the right track. And it really is consolidation, regionalization, and paring down to what is our core mission of the state government. And if it's the things that we say it is, if it's education, if it's providing the services to those that need it, we need to do that better. We should be means testing. Do you know the Medicare Savings Program that we're going to fix does look at your yearly income, but it doesn't look at any other assets that you may have. So if you're only taking a small portion of your dividends each and every year, but you're sitting on a rather large nest egg of stock and other assets,
real estate,
you're still qualifying for a program.
I mean, there are instances out there, as you know, people on the Medicare Savings Program who may have a small monthly stipend, but they own a lot of real estate, and they would qualify for the program, Representative.
Yeah, we're looking to change that. That's part of our reorganization that's going to happen for next year, is that there's also going to be an asset test. So as hard as it may seem, the state of Connecticut would love to provide all these services, but we just don't have the wherewithal anymore. So if you're sitting on a rather large nest egg of stocks and others and just living off the dividends, or you have numerous properties and real estate. Those are all going to be taken into consideration to decide your eligibility for the program.
Okay. Mr. Speaker, thanks very much for spending some time with us this morning. We'll talk again down the road. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And I wish everybody a safe and happy holiday season.
Terrific. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks. We'll talk soon.
You bet. Speaker of the House, Joe Arasimowitz, there you have it, and a lot to talk about over the next hour on CT on the Hill. Let's get a Your Money Now.